go.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's Vince Tracy in Spain.
So, you're in Spain?
Yes, Mike. I was working on an international radio station, which at the start of the recession was... Well, unfortunately, we went to the wall, and because there was no budget around at the time that I was working on the radio station, I started, I wanted to contact people who had done things during my life which had, you know, attracted my attention and obviously given me pleasure during the years, especially of the years of the music, and yours was a song that I absolutely loved.
Well, the
funny thing was, you know, as I said in my email, I went to Australia for 6 weeks, and when we came back, it would probably be within an hour of switching on the radio, what comes on? Your song, which
I thought... Amazing. It's really bizarre, really, when you think about it, you know?
Yeah. You know, I looked at the page on Wikipedia about your career, and what I thought... really was a lot of people probably don't realize that you've been an eminent director as well, and I thought can I ask you first about the song itself, just basically because it was a novelty song, and I noticed that Joe Meek was producing, and obviously, and I wondered how you became involved in it.
Well, one of the things I did when I was between the age of 15 and 20 was singing. I had singing lessons, and I had actually been in pantomime with Bob Monkhouse. So I was in the chorus of Cinderella with Bob Monkhouse. This is going back a few years, obviously, when I was about 18, you know, between school and university, really.
Yeah. And I noticed also you've got a very unusual degree. I mean, when I say unusual, only unusual to the fact that you wouldn't expect anybody to have a degree. It's lacking studies, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, in Russian studies, yes. The point is, I wanted to learn a new language, and I could have taken a degree in German or French, which I had to. But then my teacher said, why don't you go and learn Russian as a new subject, you know? And he said, since you're quite good at languages, you know, because I come from a refugee family where people speak lots of different languages, you know? I said, yeah, well, it's an adventure, you know. So it was in London. That was the good thing about it. It was in London. I didn't have to go to Oxford or something. So
yeah.
So while I was wandering around in London, London University, I also was a waiter in a coffee bar in Dean Street at Les Enfants Terribles. I was sort of looking for work and stuff, you know. And got into the Robert Stigwood organization because they booked me to do a modeling job for Kodak, his partner, Stephen Komlosy at the time. And then he introduced me to Stigwood. Stigwood said, can you sing? And I said, yeah, I was in this panto and I can sing and I like to do standards, you know, I like to sing Elvis and Frank Sinatra and everything, you know. And I've had a few scene lessons, and I was about 18, maybe it was about 20 by then, you know. So he said, write something. So I sang, you know, there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. You know, Hammerstein, what shit. You know, he said, oh, yeah, very good. So he said, and he had John Layton, who'd worked with Joe Meek.
I've made a podcast with John Layton.
But yeah, so Stigwood was ready, was really handling John.
Yeah.
And I think a guy called Ian Gregory as well, you know. So, and he had hits with John. Two or three hits. Massive hits. So, Johnny Remember Me.
Wild Wind.
Wild Wind.
Yeah.
So he was cooking, you know what I mean? And Joe Meek was hot then.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So, Stigwood and Joe had a good relationship, you know. So... he asked Joe, have you got anything? And Joe, and there's a guy called Jeff Goddard who'd written, I think it was Jeff Goddard, who wrote one of John's songs or something. And so that was hot over at Joe's, and I went actually to Joe Meek's place and tried to record something there. And they played a thing called Fountain of Love.
Yes.
Like Jack and Jill, let's climb up the hill to sin the fountain of love. I thought it was absolutely a comedy record. You know, I thought, how they take it? And in fact, the last lines of the song reveals it to be a comedy record, because he says, it's the finest pub in the old Kent Road. You see, it was the fountain of love turned out to be a pub in the old Kent Road, which is sort of a Cockney thing. But Charles Blackwell, who is the musician, a pianist and musician, who is also doing the session, so I've got another song called Little Doll, a B-side, so it was like Little Doll. So we were all relatively light-hearted, you know, in the office there, banging on the piano. So I sang this Little Doll, and I sang it, you know, with a Cockney accent. You know, well, it's a bit more realistic. You know, being down Stratlocarno, singing this song, it's a Cockney thing, because Little Doll, we've been jiving. It sounded awful with an American accent, which it was adopting in those days.
Yeah.
So as I sang it, and Charles started laughing, because he's also a Londoner.
Yeah.
Sigurd says, you know, I can hear a girl talking back when you say come outside. She says, what do you want to take me outside for? What do you want to do with me? That was a Sigurd idea. So we said, yeah, that could be funny. So Wendy was also with the modelling agency. She was a gorgeous girl in those days, very sexy figure, and that. And she was brought in. And she, Charles and I wrote these comeback lines. Get lost, all the rest of it, you know?
Yes.
And Wendy got right into it, you know, and she had a lot of, so we did it with a laugh, you know. It was still the B-side, and because it was the B-side, we let our hair down a bit. We had a bit of a laugh, a bit of fun. You know, I believe firmly in having fun when I work.
Yeah.
A lot of people take life terribly seriously, but when I work, whatever it is, where it's film, acting, I always believe there's a, you know, bit of fun is a part of life, you know, and you discover things. So the three of us having a laugh, we did both sides. The head of Southern Music came round and he said, well, I know which side I prefer. And so Come Outside was released as opposed to Fountain of Love.
Yes.
And that became the A-side, because he was publishing it, Southern Music. His name was Bob Kingston, I think, and the rest is history. It zooms straight to the top of the Hit Parade. Everybody's here, Come Outside. Everybody has it. And you know, it's, ever since then, it's got that spontaneous, if you like, just minted spontaneous view of, you know, of the pop business.
Mm.
And also at that time, I'm getting a bit sick of the English American thing. You know, it's all. I was finding it a bit sort of naff, you know.
Yes.
You know, pretty fury, and everybody all pretending to be Americans, you know. It was a bit. So I thought we'd do something a bit more, you know, down to earth, and would connect with people. And actually, we had a terrific time. It was great fun. And I was still at university. And of course, when I was doing my sessionals, they all barged. You know, these photographers barged into the exam room taking pictures which is also highly embarrassing, you know.
Well, this is lovely, Brown, because I'm a member of a group on the internet, and they post old songs, and you know, people with these old songs. For example, last night in Benidorm, I went to Benidorm Palace, and I met the Searchers, who were playing, and I was speaking with John.
Yeah,
well, I thought you'd know the name straight away, and John McNally is still going strong, and and it's lovely to actually see these guys. All right, you know, if you go and expect the greatest pop band ever, you'll probably find a few technical things that you can complain about, but I just love the fact that these guys are still going out and doing a professional show.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah.
Let me ask you now about the films, because I was actually very impressed with what I saw. Wikipedia doesn't actually write it as well as it could be written. But the ones that I'd like to ask you about, obviously, is the Myra Breckinridge, is it? Can you tell me about that one?
Well, I'd already made a film for 20th Century Fox called Joanna, which they liked very much. And but I didn't have, and it went down very well, and it even opened the Cannes Film Festival in 1968. You know, it was actually a swinging London film.
Yeah.
Called Joanna, with Donald Sutherland and a few other people. And the producer of that wanted me to do a film with he just married Leslie Caron, you know, the ex-ballerina who then became an actress. And they just got married, and they were both throwing money at each other, but it did not look like it was a happy marriage. And they suggested that, and they asked me, you know, since he's a friend, since we'd done a film together, he asked me if I wanted to do this film with her, and they'd found an Italian script, badly written script. They said, let's do this sort of a hot film, kind of scary film. And anyhow, you know, I said, well, okay, you know, I wasn't keen on it. We went to United Artists, and United Artists said, what are you going to do with this script? I think it's terrible. I said, well, I'll rewrite. He said, you're going to rewrite the whole thing. I said, yeah. He said, what kind of money you want? I said, well, I'll get the money I had on Joanna. It wasn't very much. And they were all very pleased that I'd sort of signed up for this thing. I smelt a rat. I thought, this is awful. I hate the atmosphere. I hate the whole thing. Anyhow, then I saw in a newspaper, trade paper, you know, Gore Vidal had just been given another $1 million to rewrite his script on Myra Breckinridge, and he's now worth $2.5 million, and nobody likes his script, and blah, 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 blah. I'm looking at it, Christ, they've got a lot of money to spend. And I've been sent this horrible, obscene book, which I really thought was... I remember chucking it in the trash, you know. I thought, God, this is awful. But anyway, you know, when my producer was having fights with his wife and they wanted me to do an Italian film that's nowhere. So anyway, I walked over to 20th Century Fox in New York and I said, you know this film, it got Gore Vidal writing three scripts and all crap, and, you know, about how becomes a woman and all this stuff. I said, you know, you should do a sort of balancing, you know. But, you know, it's a dream. He's having an operation, and he imagines he's a woman under the operation, and then he sort of wakes up, and it's all a dream. And he goes, yeah. So he, you know, gets you out of this pornography and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So he called the head of the studio, and then Los Angeles, and he said, my son's sitting in front of me. He's come with a great idea, you know. Millions of dollars are giving to Gore Vidal, he can't come up with a thing. He said, he's come up with this idea, it's all a dream, you see, he had an operation and he dreams this because he's a big gay, and then it's only a scream, and that's it, send him out immediately. So, David Brown, who's the head of the studio, said, can you leave tomorrow morning? Well, said, you know, on the plane to LA. Huh? Okay, he said, well, there'll be a different car for you, don't worry about your hotel, we'll pick all that up, just get on it. Well, you know. Next morning, big show for the car, champagne, building out of the barrel, you know, as much as I wanted, the first class seats, you know, it's amazing. Get there, and they're saying, well, what kind of money are we talking about here, you know? We're talking about 50 grand for the person, 75 grand for 25,000 for that, 100,000 for this. Wow, this is a bit extreme, all this money. a bit OCT, just one little idea. So I said, yeah, well, you know, it's okay. I said, but I'll tell you what, I've got this idea. I really don't like this subject very much. I don't like the subject matter, and this is just an idea I had. I think it could be funny, but it's not really my cup of tea. So I'll just write you the script and pick up whatever money you want to give me for that. I really didn't want to be stuck in. He said, why wouldn't you want to direct your own screenplay? I said, well, I wouldn't want to direct it. I said, but you know, Hollywood, he might need to without every, you know, he's got a reputation for people, you know, he just makes a mess of them, you know. And I don't think, I want to keep my virginity, you know, I don't want to be, you know, my little movies and, you know, have a bit of fun. I don't want to. No, if you write the script, you have to direct it because no one can understand what you're writing. I said, of course, you can understand. I said, I'll write every close up and long shot in the screenplay so they don't ever. No. You go to it. Why wouldn't you want to direct your movie? Crap. But then this is where he caught me. I said, can we have. He said, we've got the option on you direct it. So I said, well, I said, I've got a much better idea. He said, what's that? I said, can we have an option? You want to do it? I'll do it. You want to do it? I'll do it. If you want to do it, he says, listen, he says, a two-way option is no option. So, sorry, you know, I saw this hundreds of thousands of dollars flying out there. So I said, okay, you know, so I read the script, and the option needs directed. You know, I had all kind of aggravation from Gordon and Furious that I was writing and making this film, and he had his whole gang of friends, you know, who all really didn't want me to have anything to do with it. And I just laughed, you know, it was just a bit of fun. I mean, it's like, you know, a really strange, funny, particular comedy, you know, it's nuts.
Well, what sort of age would you be at that this time?
Late 20s, I suppose. Yeah. Mm. I think I did my first film when I was 25, but I did when I was about 27, I did, so I was probably 18, I don't know.
And how did you actually start, just something you wanted to do, you found the content, how did you get into it?
Which one?
To do anything. I mean, you know, it just seems fantastic that you were able to go from pop song into producing and directing, and it seems that you've done it all off your own bat.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that I was a singer. My career had been drying off a bit. I was doing a bit. I met this photographer down in Holland Park, and I said to him, I've always wanted to do a bit of photography. As a kid, I had a little dark room, you know.
Yeah.
And I've just bought two Pentax, right? So I'd like to, could you tell me something about photography? So his name was Stanley Bonetsky, he's a nice guy, and, you know, and he had his page in the front window, and he'd also, his partner, they knew him, but my ear wasn't with us right then, going up.
Yeah.
And a couple of tours, but, you know, didn't have any more hits on the pipeline particularly, and Stigwood was being a bit of an arse. So, I'll give you a roll of film, go off and do what you want to photograph. I said, okay, thanks very much. I took this piece of film. I had my girlfriend then, a very pretty girl, beautiful girl, and she wore sort of a few different outfits, and I did pictures of her, just for fun, you know, around the house, and nothing from all parts of the place. So I took the pictures back to him, and I said, there you go, so there's hope, and he goes and comes out, and film to the light. There's nothing wrong here. I don't know. I don't know. I used it, developed it the way I do all lady pictures, wedding pictures. Nothing. I said, you probably know stuff. I said, no, there's nothing in this film. Nothing in the film. I said, give me another film. I took another film, went with my girlfriend, and we did the whole thing all over again. I wore this dress, that dress, the other dress, looked nice, pretty good. She's a lovely girl called Gabrielle Licuri. Took it back, and I said, there, I've done it now. So, prints right. So, all the pictures have come out. Oh, that's good. So, he prints them up. I said, what do you think? He said, wait a minute, I'm going to go down to Fleet Street, see if I can hug them. Because he had a press bit as well, you know. Sort of best photographs. In fact, which is sort of kind of how I met him. So, he came back and gave me 70 quid. He said, yeah, they're publishing a whole page spread on this in the Sun, in the new Sun newspaper. And the next day, I'll get all these pictures up, send it to a photographer, and there are his pictures. But on, I just became a photographer. So I was every week, I had a, you know, fashion shoots, models, you know, human interest, you know, lots of people.
When we're doing the union and the diary, did you have any choice in the casting, or was that always somebody else used to have to do that?
It was always a fight. You know. You're a director, you have a choice.
Yeah.
I used in my reference. I didn't know until much later that he'd been given 50 grand for a critique of my screenplay. He wanted to play this part, and I didn't think he could do it. But he had, I didn't think he would to play a cowboy. I mean, I don't think he's a very good actor. He's a great director. I'm thinking he's not a great director, which of course he is.
Yeah.
But I didn't see him as the actor for this part. And he turned out to be okay, you know. He was all right in the part.
But what really did to my eye was if you had it's very often what's written on the internet is not correct, which is why I always like to just ask whether or not that, you know, that A, it's correct, and then B, my question would be here, looking at Raquel Welch, Mae West, and Fawcett Farrett all starring, that must have been quite difficult to sort of keep that on a nice even keel.
Oh God, yeah, of course. Raquel hated the fact that Mae West. I got Mae West. Well, I love Mae. You know, I mean,
yes.
I really got on like a house on fire. I loved her. I mean, she's such a great personality. So much fun. Raquel was all kinds of. But when I cast Raquel, they said, what kind of person would play this part? And I said, well, you need someone. I said, you know, it's a bit hard and sort of artificial looking, sort of, you think she might have been a man, you know. So I guess Raquel Welch, who's had a lot of facelifts and everything. I said, oh, we've got her under contract for $125,000, it's really cheap, you know. Oh, great, let's put her in a part. I said, yeah, you know, I said, yeah, I could see her doing it, yeah. You know, so that's how she got the part. And then, you know, this other part, Letitia Van Allen, you know, they said, who do you want? I said, well, I'd love to have Mae West. I went round to see her. She's absolutely charming, very, very, very funny, lovely lady. And we got on like that house. And of course, Raquel was furious, thinking that she was the star. And suddenly she was prompted by Mae West. Great Mae West, you know. So it was she didn't have a nice, kind word to say. Within a few days of her marrying him, and she was terribly unhappy with him, and she and I got on really well, and, you know, we were in love, and, you know, it was nice, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking of all sorts of personalities that I've talked with or talked about, and other people have given me the information, and people, for example, you know, these singers that used to sing with the big bands, and then they would themselves end up as a very lonely figure, which I,
yeah.
You know, I did think that this sounded very similar, actually.
Well, I did see her, actually, a few years ago now, because she was very unhappy with Gunther, and he was a real pig, you know. He was a real. I think he's dead now, actually.
Yeah.
He was a very arrogant, typical German sort of. I don't want to be too racist about the Germans, because I have quite a few nice ones, but he was an arrogant son of a bitch, you know, and treated her like crap. And she felt, so she said to me, she needed someone sort of to defend her, really, to kind of protect her, and she thought Gunther would be the right guy, and he liked having a bit of having a trophy.
Yes.
But she was extremely unhappy. They just got married, and
would this have been anywhere near the time I bought a record by her, which was Tu Veux or Tu Veux Pas, a French record, which I loved, actually. It was just one of those catchy,
correct,
yeah.
One on two, yeah. Well, yeah, she did that with, not Serge Dispel, she did it with, Serge.
No, that was Jane Birkin. No, the one I'm talking about is, it was called Tu Veux or Tu Veux Pas, and it was very upbeat, and I played it in the discos in the north of England, and, you know, nobody else was using it, so I just thought that it was a good song. She obviously sang reasonably well, and I wondered whether or not maybe you'd heard a singing voice very much.
Yeah, we used to sing together, actually. I wrote a French song when I made my first song. It's called Road to Saint-Tropez, and she loved it. Yeah, I mean, we used to sing together. I'd play the guitar, and she'd sing along, you know, and yeah, we spent a lot of time, you know, in Paris together and singing and stuff. I was thinking of doing something with her. Eventually, we never did, but she wanted to, but she had a lot of other things going on in her life. When I met her, she was really hot, you know. I mean, she was a major star. You know?
Yes.
And she was so funny and charming and cheeky and lovely and just great. I mean, a wonderful, wonderful person. Lovely. I mean, gorgeous.
Yes.
All the movie stars I've ever met, that one, that was the real thing.
Yes. Let me ask you about your own career in acting now, because obviously you've appeared in all sorts of things that we will know who you were from the face, but maybe always connected the fact that it was you, singer, the producer, the director, and then also in series like The Avengers and Jonathan Creek and The Bill.
Yeah. It's the same Mike Sharp.
Yeah, you've been in a huge amount of things.
Yeah, I'm a bit parts nowadays as I get older. I was in Les Miserables, I did a bit of Matt, and did a sort of picture the other day with Simon Pegg, and I do bit parts now. I don't get leading roles anymore, you know. But it's all right, you know, because I'm getting on. I've got a family, and I don't really work as hard as I used to. I don't go on tour, you know. I don't think I would these days take a play out from, you know, tour in the provinces and to bring it into the West End. I've been offered plays like that, but I'm at a stage in my career that I don't think I would do it. I've been asked to do, you know, take a play out, you know, on Manchester and Birmingham and Glasgow and then try it out on the road, come into the West End. You know, it's what a serious actor normally does.
Yes.
But I'm just doing sort of small parts in films, basically. You know, I haven't got the energy to do that right now.
Yeah.
Maybe when my last kid grows up, I'll get put on my hiking shoes. Get out there. Get on the board. I love acting, actually. I mean, the great mystery isn't really that one does it. It's you know, all these different things. The great mystery is that more people don't do it. We're in show business, you know.
Yes.
I'm an artist, and I paint and photography and write poetry and stuff, but I'm an artist, basically. And whether it's theatre or film or photography or singing or acting, it's all part of a spontaneous enthusiasm for life, really.
I have a friend that you might remember. Do you remember Paul Melba?
Melba?
He was an impressionist.
Oh, I think I do, yeah. You know, these musicians were on the boat. He was on the boat for about a year, and his father said to me, I'm getting him off. He's neglecting his family, the kids, everything. He's just out there. Rich old ladies giving him lots of money, and the band, and then they go from place to place, you know. To the Caribbean and New York, you know what I mean?
Well, for us, we went to see family in Sydney, in Australia, and every single day there was a new liner, a new cruise liner would come in, and of course you'd have a lot of the people from the cruise liner would come out, and we'd often meet and have a chat with some people from different parts of the world, and it was just great for me to really understand a bit more about my friend Paul Melba, who was telling me about coming into port and, you know, what the life was like cruising, you know.
They have a marvellous time.
Yes.
They do. These young musicians, you know, came back to town, but they really were making so much money, and it's a holiday, it's a permanent holiday. Some of these old people get on a boat and they get off it.
Yes.
You know, years go by, or their pension goes straight into paying for the cruise.
For the cruise.
That's all they do, you know. They never get off. They never. Their feet never touch terra firma, ever.
Yeah. Well, look, Mike, look. I tell you what I'd like to do now, if it's okay with you. I'll create a page on my website, basically referring to our chat, and I'll put the podcast up there. If you don't mind, I'll share it also with my group. They call themselves the 40s to 70s Revival Group.
Okay.
And then there's another group as well, which it's great because you've got all these people who are reviving great memories and great artists like yourself who basically are still around, and maybe because you're not on Top of the Pops every week, people don't quite remember that you've had a fantastic career. And you know,
it's all right. I mean, it's like Alzheimer's. I don't want to know. I mean, I want people to remember.
Look, Mike, I really, really appreciate the fact that you've given me your time today.
Lovely. Thank you so much for calling.
And I'll send you a copy of the link, and obviously...
Of course. Yeah, I think this whole getting on the net thing is what it's all about right now.
I think it is.
I'm reading the paper here. That all the new businesses that are making money are on the net. People who are selling things off the net in shops there, they're not getting anywhere.
Yes.
The only businesses that are doing well are those ones who are using the internet. In fact, I'm going to make sure that my family gets stuck right into it. But, you know, tech fund, rest of the economy.
I'll send you a page.
Online startups become. If you've got any good ideas for startups and stuff, let me know. Faster broadband they're doing, and all of them, you know, Widenfeld and all these guys are making money. And that's the only business that is making money. All the rest, they're shutting them down. Everything.
Yeah.
So I wish you all the best. Turn your website into a money-making operation.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I'm sure it'll be a great success.
Mike, thanks very much indeed. And
my pleasure.
I'll send you a copy of the links.
Lovely talking to you.
Thank you. Bye.